Next up, item six, a briefing seagrass update. Ed?
For the record, my name is Ed Hagen, the Regional Director of Coastal Fisheries Division of Rockport. I appreciate the opportunity to be before you today. I will provide you with a brief update of the seagrass protection regulations you approved last year. I plan to present you with some information on seagrasses, a brief history of the seagrass management activities over the past 15 years, a reminder of the specific regulation that you adopted last year, and finally give you some examples of the extensive efforts to make the regulation effective. There are five species of seagrasses in Texas. They're also commonly referred to as submerged aquatic vegetation. Seagrasses are important for food, protection, bottom stabilization, nutrient recycling, and general ecosystem health where they occur. This table identifies some of the disturbances of the seagrasses listed on the left side of the natural disturbances. Research has documented that the most significant factors contributing to seagrass loss are the dredging, excessive nutrients, and boating activities. This was Montagne in 1996. TPWD actively participates in conservation of the efforts in all three of those areas. Specifically, we review permits that have are habitat alteration permits in conjunction with the Corps and other regulatory agencies. And most noticeably, we have participated extensively and lately with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality when we got seagrasses included as a water quality standard. I will now focus on the activities regarding some of the boating impacts on seagrasses. The past decades have seen an increase in overall boating activity on the coast and significant changes in boat styles and outboard motor horsepower. Quick access to shallow waters is very common now. As a matter of fact, we most recently included all vessels, all the new shallow draft high-powered boats, into the proclamation prohibiting the use of airboats to harass fish. That was just done recently by the commission. As early as 1994, TPWD began educating boaters about boating in seagrasses, and research and management education were the focus of a symposium conducted by the General Land Office, then the Texas Natural Resource Conservation Commission, and now the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TPWD, to establish statewide seagrass conservation plan. We had a symposium, and now we have a seagrass conservation plan. Our initial efforts to manage seagrasses occurred in the year 2000 when Redfish Bay in the Central Coast, which we focus on, was designated a state scientific area, and that was in place for 5 years. Last year, the Redfish Bay State Scientific Area was renewed for an additional 5 years, in which uprooting was prohibited in that area. And it is in that, particularly after the first 5 years, we focused on habitat protection. That's the focus of the state scientific area. This is a map of the Redfish Bay. There's Redfish Bay in the north part of that, in the lower part. The yellow boundary indicates the Redfish Bay State Scientific Area. It was created under Partial Wildlife Code 81.501. It is approximately 32,000 acres, about 50,000 square miles, and there are about 14,000 acres of submerged vegetation. All five species of the seagrasses occur in this very highly productive area. Rockport is to the north, Port Aransas' jetty there on the lower right, and Port Ingleside gets a combination of Gulf waters and fresh water from both bay systems. Following extensive public input and formal public hearings, you adopted the current regulation that you see before you. It is a conservation measure for habitat protection. It purposefully does not exclude access to any portion of the bay. There are no no-prop zones. Before, we had voluntary no-prop zones, and we had a mandatory no-prop down in the lower Laguna Madre, upper Laguna Madre. But this does not exclude access to any type of boat or boaters. It specifically places the responsibility of habitat protection on the boaters, where it belongs. Coastal Fisheries accept the responsibility that the regulation needs to be understood in order to be effective. Hence, we have developed an extensive effort during the next 5 years, the longevity of this particular regulation. And this kind of lists our objectives. There are four of those, and I will go over those very briefly with you. We have a very aggressive campaign, and I'll talk about education outreach. Within education outreach, and on the left, you can see the various electronic, electronic and print media, where we have outlets, and the bottom figure, of course, is the most impressive. Through all of those magazines, newspapers, radio, and TV, and the venues listed on the right, the magazines and all the efforts in which we can get electronic and print media, we have made about 9 million impressions. At this point, I guess I need to thank the outdoor writers, the publishers, the freelance writers, and our own staff who helped get the word out. That's pretty impressive, and that's in the last year since the reg went into effect. An effective and guaranteed method of getting the word to voters is via direct contact. Again, on the left is where the staff has spent efforts in presentations, pre-launch brochure dispersal, voter education courses, that type of thing. Again, listing all the venues that we've done and a number of events. The numbers, again, are approaching now 4,000 one-on-one contacts. We've actually talked to voters and distributed over 30,000 brochures. We have two types of brochures. I think you were distributed the waterproof brochure that's in front of you. And we give those to voters because it is waterproof and outlines the area. And we have a non-waterproof one for general distribution at public events. Another way of educating voters is through signage. In the center of this particular photo are the boundary marker signs around the perimeter. There are 32 of them. Those for recognition of that voters are within the area. In the upper left-hand corner are informational signs. There are 17 of those within the Redfish Bay State Scientific Area to help voters recognize they are within the seagrass area that's protected by law. In the lower left are land marina signs at every ramp entering Redfish Bay, and on that it has the same map that's in your brochure there, an informational map about boating in seagrasses. Finally, there are navigational signs in the upper right-hand photo. That is, if you look at that, it's a square with green. It conforms to the U.S. Coast Guard day markers, the red triangle and green square. We got permission from the Coast Guard to install two preferred access lanes. During all the discussion in the last several years, there was a call for run lanes, how to navigate through the seagrass meadows. And with discussions and that type of thing, we actually installed, we renamed that to get away from high-speed running. We renamed that to preferred access lanes. We would prefer boaters to go through these marked channels using the green and red as aids to navigation. And the lanes provide one of the lanes in the northern part of Redfish Bay provides a drift to access point in which boaters can get their boat on top. And within that access point and access lane, they may or may not hit bottom with their propeller, but they'll be safe from the enforcement of the law. And another one in the lower part is a navigation lane through a very specific portion of dense seagrass meadows. The Coastal Bend Guides Association provides input on the location of those two preferred access lanes. Law enforcement has been a vital force of education outreach on the water. Our divisions have worked very closely during the past year. If you'll recall the discussion regarding how difficult it was going to be to enforce this particular type of regulation. Game Wardens have helped with media day giving presentations and direct contact with voters out in the field. And most recently, we were invited to a law enforcement regional meeting and gave game wardens a kind of an update on Seagrass 101 and some techniques upon how to collect some evidence when they observe violations. And we appreciate law enforcement's commitment. The second item on the objective table was the Human Dimension Survey. And A pre-regulation survey was mailed to over 1,500 voters who used Redfish Bay State Scientific Area the 3 years prior to the regulation. We wanted to measure their knowledge and behavior prior to the regulation and the extensive campaign that we're doing or in order to measure any changes in subsequent years. As you can see from that table, their perceptions of seagrasses for food and water quality in the nursery area is very high. However, I think we need a little work on their understanding of the acreage, their knowledge of the acreage of the seagrasses, and whether seagrasses recover. And through our education campaign, we hope to measure their change in knowledge and understanding of that. This figure measures boater behavior before the regulation. As you can see, they are very active in drifting, wading, and poling. We have a very significant partner in the Coastal Bend Bays and Estuary Program at Corpus Christi that has had a campaign for several years on TV through public service announcements to educate boaters while boating in seagrasses. And their mantra is lift, drift, pole, and troll. And we've kind of repeated that. We've taken that on as part of our education campaign also. And you can see there, when the survey is repeated in 3 to 5 years through our mail out, we expect to see some significant changes in the latter part where they sometimes motor and they sometimes troll. We would like to see some behavior changes. PropScar study. We have two major projects, one actually in the water and one in the air to evaluate PropScars. We designed and implemented a unique study in which we swim 35 100-meter randomly selected transects in the seagrass areas. We identify, count, profile, accurately locate the scars. Annual repeat swims will enable us to determine a rate of change in the number of scars, scar condition, and other factors around those scars. This labor-intensive technique will provide us with some extremely refined data actually on the scars itself. The use of high-powered GPS has actually been very useful already in the other phase of that in the air, in which we were able to acquire through state wildlife grants some very high-resolution visible spectrum aerial photography. This is the northwest portion of Redfish Bay State Scientific Area. This is about 8,000 acres of densely vegetated seagrasses. We'll be able to, with this high-resolution photography, and I'll show you this in just a second, we'll be able to delineate scars and to detect differences of scars from year to year when we refly that photography. If you look right in the middle of that photograph, there's a little red square. I think you can see that very right in the middle. And over, almost due to the left of that, in the intercoastal, which is that diagonal going from lower left kind of to the center top, you might see a little wake of a boat. Zoomed in a little bit, that's the red square now at a quarter mile area for high resolution, and now you see the boat over in the coastal waterway. Zooming in a little bit more, and now you see the extensive amount of scars that we are able to detect with this high resolution. We are going to delineate all these scars, and we certainly have our work cut out for us. So. In summary, seagrass scarring is a habitat issue for which boaters have the onus of responsibility. This diagram demonstrates the average depth of water a boater should be in for takeoff and running. The depth of the takeoff to achieve plane, in other words, getting your boat back on plane, is a combined depth of the draft of the boat, the depth of the boat, and the depth of the propeller. Application twice that depth is when that boat goes down and gets back on plane. Application of this rule of thumb will protect the seagrasses. You can't define it for every boat because they all have different drafts and different depths and that type of thing. The seagrass protection regulation is truly hinges on boater understanding, knowledge, and behavior, and this is what we are actually addressing. The interest in this important seagrass issue is exemplified by our numerous partners. And as you can see, it ranges from the Coastal Conservation, Texas Nature Conservancy, Coastal Bend Guides Association, NOAA, Coastal Bend Bays and Estuary Program, University of Texas, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Coast Guard and General Land Office. We have had great partners. I'll identify the photo on the right are high school student members of the Spanish and Science Club Network. This is an educational component of the Gulf of Mexico Foundation. These students have been recruited and are assisting us in doing pre-launch surveys and brochure distribution. They come down to ramps on the weekends at 6 o'clock and help us give brochures to boaters before they launch into Redfish Bay. We appreciate all the divisions within the agency who have helped us in a number of different ways, and we appreciate the commission's support. Thank you very much. Any questions?
You've done a great job following up with all those issues that we heard about when we had that rather controversial meeting a year ago, May.
Yeah.
Actually, it was a year ago this meeting, wasn't it?
Right. Yes,
we're discussing seagrass protection. Yeah.
We have an extensive program to make sure that this regulation is understood and we can measure its effectiveness. I guess that's the most important thing is to see if it's effective. We have four more years in which to do that, and we appreciate your support.
Well, this is a good example of the staff going out and actually doing what we all talked about at the meeting. You did that, and it's interesting. I really haven't heard any of the negative comments that we since that time.
We'd like to continue to be
done a great job.
All people have input.
Done a great job in the community. Yeah, John.
Mr. Hagan, wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
I'm sure that you're beginning to make headway. I have one question for you. Back on your slide, disturbances, natural and anthropogenic.
Yes, sir.
Of those, which are the most detrimental and scratch off dredging? You know, you can't do anything about that. But which is the most detrimental to our seagrass stands? Whether it's storms, bioturbation, sedimentation? Is it algae blooms, excess nutrients?
I don't think I could pick one that's the most detrimental. I think they all, I mean, they...
two or three.
Oh, well, obviously I think the increased population on the coast with changes in habitat, building and construction and bulkheading and hardening of surface, increased runoff. So one is water quality. It says include nutrients, but that includes runoff, changes in dredging due to permits. Obviously, if a hurricane comes through and there's sedimentation, that is one that we can't control. Mm-hmm. But in time, seagrasses they come and go. So even we're finding that what you saw one year in a particular species of seagrass may have gotten sediment on it, and another species. Species of seagrass takes its place. There are natural things that occur. So, obviously, we have tremendous amount of aerial photography on the prop scars. And so, at this point, that's one thing that we can't focus on. I'm not sure you can pinpoint any that are the driving force in seagrasses.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions, Fred? Great work. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
I think we're going to take a... lunch recess. We'll stand in recess and reconvene after lunch and pick up with item 7.